Welcome to College Talk. I am Russ Goldman. This is our post-match of the embarrassing 3-0 loss for Fulham against Bournemouth. This was a terrible loss, and we'll be breaking it down in a few minutes with my co-host, who happens to be Max Cohen. Before I go to Max, I do want to acknowledge some horrible events over the weekend. Two tragedies, one in the city of Leicester and another in the city of Pittsburgh in the United States. These tragedies have shaken me to the core and make me put it into perspective life in itself. So I just wanted to acknowledge this. And Max, I'm now going to go to you. I want to let you share whatever you want to say about both of these situations. I'm still affected by both of them.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Russ. I think, you know, after hearing the news of both of those tragedies, obviously our hearts go out to the victims and the communities affected, but also yes, really puts into perspective, you know, what sports is, you know, what football is about. And of course, I'm sure both of us were feeling devastated after the Fulham result, but at the end of the day, it really does pale in comparison to other events happening in life. And it's easy to get caught up, you know, in the everyday drama of what's going on at Fulham right now. And obviously that's what we're going to do today, but it's always nice to take a step back and realize, you know, what's happening in the world and how it's really, it's a scary place right now, Russ.
Yeah.
But I think sport can offer us that outlet in many ways to channel, you know, a lot of what we're feeling and escape some of the scary stuff happening. So that's what I really look to Fulham as in some respects.
Totally agree with that. And I'm glad that you shared your thoughts on it. And I do want to mention that we decided to wait a day out of respect for these tragedies and really just reflect a little bit more. It really has affected me, and I'm glad that we made that decision. But like you mentioned, Max, Fulham is a passion of both of ours, and this is a, you know, an escape for us, you know, when you're looking at the real life situation. So it's good to have this outlet, this passion that we have. And but I do want to just, before we move on, just mention one more time, my thoughts are with everyone in the cities of Leicester and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm thinking of all of you, and we'll get through all of this together. Again, just continuing to think about everyone in these two cities. All right, my friend, let's now talk about what happened on Saturday. Let's talk about the Fulham match. I want to get your opening thoughts on this loss. Max, unfortunately, this has been a habit. We do these post-match shows. You come on with me, and it's almost like a broken record. This match is a little bit different. We have a lot to talk about with it. Just give me your opening thoughts here.
No, not good, Russ. I mean, you look at what we said after the Cardiff City match. We said, is that going to be a turning point for us?
Yeah.
And you look at a home match against Bournemouth, and you can say all you want about Bournemouth being a good side this year, and that's all true. But at the end of the day, in the Premier League, you have to target matches such as Bournemouth at home as places to pick up not just 1 point, but really pick up the 3 points.
Oh, I agree.
And what happened on Saturday was the complete opposite. We didn't just get beat. We got beat 3-0 at home. And compounded with what happened against Cardiff, compounded with the 5 goals at home against Arsenal, it's becoming a trend of losses, a trend of negativity. And I'm worried at this point, Russ. I really thought we'd see a reaction. I think in some respects you did see a reaction, but it was not nearly good enough. And I think we're going to talk about the comments from Tim Ream and discuss whether the players are up for it or are ready to battle for Fulham. But at this moment in time, I need to see a change. And of course, we're going to point to the Huddersfield match next week as another massive match, you know, their bottom of the league and whatnot. But when will we see a response? When will we see an actual reaction, that result that translates to points on the board? And I don't have an answer for that right now.
Neither do I. And I hope that we see a reaction against Huddersfield. Field Town, that is a match that they desperately need all 3 points, Max. And just like winning can breed more winning. Losing can breed more losing. We're seeing that. It just continues and continues. And there are many factors that go along with that. You have the head coach deciding to change things up, change formations, trying to do different things. So he's trying to find a solution. But I do believe that there's a lack of confidence with this team. And actually, I'm going to read some quotes from Tim Ream, which we are going to talk about that at the end of the transcript that I'm going to read out to you. But this Tim Ream interview, and again, I want to give credit to Ryan O'Donovan from football.london, who put on his website the full transcript. So we're going to do this in two parts, my friend, but very revealing. Again, Tim Ream coming out strong, talking about Fulham after the match. So let's go through this now, and I will stop halfway through, and then we'll talk about it. So these are questions, and I'm just going to read the question and then the answer from Tim Ream. And in this first part, there are going to be a few questions, and I'll just read the answers after that, and then I'll go to you, my friend. Here we go. This is from Tim Ream, and the question was, are the players playing for the manager? His answer, quote, I don't think it has anything to do with the manager, to be honest with you. We're not playing for ourselves and for each other, first and foremost, and there's no togetherness. We give up a goal and heads go down, and today it was a bit different. We had a little bit more of the ball in the second half. We came out with a little bit more fight in us and started going at Bournemouth. We gave up a second goal, and that's when heads just really dropped. There's no fight amongst the group right now, and I said midweek, we're not a team at the minute. We're a group of individuals who don't look like they want to stay in the league. Until that changes, and guys, myself included, step up even more, it's going to stay this way. Then he has asked, are there too many new faces? Quote, no, I don't think you can blame that on the new guys. I don't think that's fair on them. I don't think that's fair on the guys who are here. There's just not that same mentality and determination. I think too many guys are happy to skate through and not put in the effort that maybe we put in last season. That's down to every individual. We have to look at ourselves first before pointing fingers. This guy and that guy. You have to look in the mirror. It's easy to say that I know. Unless you're willing and ready to raise your own standards, you can't expect other people to raise their own. And one more question. When you mention your frustration, do you see that among teammates? Here's his answer. Quote, yeah, and that's natural. Everybody in there wants to win games. Everybody wants to be further up the table. Everybody wants to score goals. It's not anything special. It's not anything new. There's definitely a frustration. We're not picking up results. We're not winning games and not conceding so many. It's not a frustration with this player or that player. It's more of a frustration at the situation, not one thing that's going on, unquote. Okay, those are quotes from Tim Ream. Asked three questions. What stands out to you from what I shared, Max?
For me, don't make that public, Tim Ream. Keep that in-house. I think everything expressed there might be true.
Yep.
It's a fair point to say. Don't speak that to the press. Keep that inside the dressing room. It just creates I think we don't want to hear about this. Of course, that might be the fact situation that the players aren't trying, the players or whatever you said, skating through, not really trying as hard as they could have. But don't air your own dirty laundry in public. I just think that's a questionable decision from Tim Ream. Obviously, he's made the calculation that this is going to get a reaction out of his teammates.
Yep.
But he did the same thing in midweek, and I don't think it made one bit of a difference. Yep. And it just honestly makes the club look even worse than it is right now. I'm going to have to take a big issue with players calling out teammates and calling out himself. I mean, in public, I'm not a fan of that, I'll be honest with you, Russ. I don't think he should be
Max,
saying that kind of stuff in public.
I'm very glad that you said that. And while you're saying this, I'm thinking about my own team, the New England Patriots. And this would be a big no-no for them. This is something that head coach Bill Belichick would be livid about. Like you mentioned, keep it in-house. Ignore the noise. Don't let it get out. Don't let the noise get out. And he's letting the noise get out. He's letting this get out. Handle it in-house. Don't do this. He's probably, like you mentioned, trying to get a reaction to try to better things. But this is not the way to do it. I'm glad that you said this because I actually feel the exact same way. Thank you for bringing that up, my friend.
Yeah, and for sure. And it just, I mean, you mentioned the Patriots. You can say whatever you want about the Patriots, but I think one thing everyone can agree on is they're a professionally run organization.
Yeah.
And professionally run clubs, like Fulham should be in practice, this doesn't happen.
No.
It shouldn't happen.
This shouldn't happen, my friend. I'm glad that we're talking about this because if a player is going to speak, keep it in-house, keep it general. Don't tell the media these types of things because it just makes, I think, the matter worse.
Yeah. And, I mean, we do have to look at his comments at face value and say, you know, who is culpable? You know, I mean, he I mean, Tim Ream, if Tim Ream was playing superbly every week and was being a complete warrior and really was what he was last season, then maybe these comments have more weight. But I think we can all agree he's not nearly at his best this season. And I think you kind of lose some of your credibility. I think Tim Ream has not played to his potential this season. And you can't there and call your other teammates if you've not been, you know, a superb leader on the pitch yourself. That's what kind of gets me angry. But is it true? Do you really think there are players at Fulham who don't really try their hard? I mean, it's a weird situation to think about because obviously last season it was this tremendous group mentality with that 23-match unbeaten run and overcoming all the adversity of starting out the season on such a poor state. Do you think that's gone, Russ? I mean, that's what really worries me. Is what Tim Ream really saying true, or is he trying to sensationalize it just to get a reaction?
What I think right now, Max, is that you have a bunch of new players, and he's not blaming the new players, but you have all these people coming together, brand new team, and they're playing as individuals and not as a team, and that's part of the problem. And when you lose, it just continues to build and build and build because you're not building a winning mentality. You're building a losing mentality. And then you start pointing fingers. What is this? This is pointing fingers, Max. This is basically blaming everyone. And I understand that, but keep it in-house. Keep it in-house. You win and you lose as a team. Maybe he should just say that we're all culpable and just leave it at that. But this is taking it a step further. So I'm there with you on this. And I'm a fan of Tim Ream's. I'm not a fan of this at all. So I'm glad that you actually were the one to say it. I was thinking the same thing, my friend. I'm glad that you came out and said that. All right, here's the second part of this. And here are a couple more questions posed to Tim Ream. Here's another question. How bad is the lack of confidence? Here's a quote from Tim Ream. Quote, it's a huge issue. That goes back to the mentality. Okay, so we concede a goal. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to crumble or are we going to try and change things? After the first goal, we looked like we were going to try and change things. We came out in the second half, looked like we were going to do something about it. And for some reason, the second goal goes in, and that's when heads go down. It's human nature to a certain extent, but you still have to fight. It's not acceptable to just cave in and roll over, unquote. Here's the second question. How crucial is next week at Huddersfield? Here's his answer. Quote, every game's crucial. It doesn't matter. Whether it's Huddersfield, Bournemouth, Liverpool, we have to start getting results, getting 3 points. We need to be more solid all over the pitch, unquote. Okay, my friend, those are two more questions and answers from Tim Ream. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's true. And, you know, after the second goal, obviously, it's not just the second goal. It's also sending off that really compounded it. So I think was there a lack of fight? Possibly. But when you're already down 2-0 and you're down to 10 men, and then you concede that third goal, at some point, I think Fulham, we can maybe criticize a team kind of paradoxically for being too open once we're down by a couple of goals. I mean, we saw this against the Arsenal game. A lot of teams kind of pile on late goals against us when they're chasing the game. So I don't know if it's necessarily a sense of heads dropping or us trying to be too open and trying to be too attacking, but it does seem a trend towards end of games when we're already down by 2 goals. We tend to concede another one just to compound the result and make it look a lot worse than it actually is. I mean, I can list 3 matches off the top of my head. The Everton match, the Arsenal match, and the most recent Bournemouth match, maybe even Cardiff, when the scores probably should have been a lot closer than they were, but because of a willingness to maybe be too gung-ho or take too many chances once we're already down heavily, the scores got compounded to look even worse. So I think maybe Tim Ream is going to say that's because heads dropped, but I don't really even know if that's the right analysis of that. But, I mean, who knows? It's the fact of the matter is we keep getting down in matches. We haven't scored the first goal in a match in a while. And when you're going behind, you're always going to start off negatively. And it's always going to be a mountain to climb.
Okay, very good then, my friend. Max, we have another co-host joining us, Mr. Mike Gregg. Mike, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, Max. I got your message, Russ, and I just came in. So we're doing some stats. Saw your message. Oh, after the weekend, maybe it's worth coming on and put in the view.
Sure. Well, Mike, listen, we were just talking about the comments from Tim Ream after the match. I don't know if you happen to see the transcript from Ryan O'Donovan. So feel free to share your thoughts on that if you've seen them. We were just going through them. And then I want your opening thoughts on what you watched.
Yeah, I did see his comments. I sort of skim read them earlier today, and obviously he was also in the press last week. So he seems to be the go-to voice in the dressing room at the moment, or at the club, which I'm finding a bit odd when you consider, you know, Kearney is club captain. You could argue McDonald's vice captain.
Yep.
I know he does some stuff. So maybe he's taken it upon himself to put himself forward, and fair play to him. But you can just tell in the tone of sort of reading the stuff, you know, it's everyone's frustrated, trying to find a way to get things to work. And, you know, there's lots of stories about unrest and camps and all this kind of stuff. And you always had that in any kind of, you know, team. There's always going to be cliques are probably the wrong word. Right. But, you know, you have groups, friends, age groups, that kind of stuff. But, you know, they've got to get together. Otherwise, you know, the only group they're going to be part of come the end of the season is a group that gets relegated. So right. If they want that on their CV, that's up to them.
Well, Mike, one of the things Max and I were just talking about is the fact that Tim Ream, this is the second time he has spoken out. The first one was with Sky Sports. And I really gave this some thought. Maybe this is just from how I react here to some of the teams, is that basically players don't call out other players like this. Keep it in-house. How do you feel about him basically calling out his teammates? Because I feel a little bit uncomfortable. I wish he would have kept this in-house, because I think this is could potentially be making the matter worse.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, he's obviously not called out anyone individual.
No, he hasn't.
And I did read that specific part today, because, you know, on a couple of forums and a couple of people posting, you know, they are saying that there are groups and that it must be all the new players. They're the ones who aren't, you know, getting involved. But actually, if you read the headline, and he talks about we haven't got the, you know, we haven't carried over from last year. Is he talking about some of the players who came up? Have they not stepped up to the plate? You know, because it's such a difficult thing. And, you know, I understand what you're saying, Russ. I do understand. But then, you know, we criticise players for not saying anything and having a bit of a closed shop. So, you know, and you believe what's been said, and they had some harsh words with each other. Yeah. In the dressing room, apparently, but as long as you don't call out individuals, I mean, you can say, you know, you're not saying there's, he didn't say anything which was unexpected, you know, he just admits that everyone's got to improve and pull together, and I actually thought the stuff he said midweek was probably worse than the quotes I've seen today.
Okay, fair enough there, my friend. All right. Let me get your opening thoughts on this match, and then we'll break it down.
Right. Well, I mean, there's obviously been a lot written and, you know, a lot of hasty comments, I believe, anyway. Actually, at the game, there's no doubt from very early on, Bournemouth were the better side. You can't knock that at all. We give away a silly penalty. But up until the second goal, you know, it's a close game. You know, Rico makes one save. Schürrle has a shot on target in the first half. But there's not much else going on, in fact. And while Bournemouth did attack well, certainly beginning of the second half, we had quite a bit of the ball before they scored. So I thought we were doing okay, but the second goal just killed us. And it is almost every game we're starting with a two-goal deficit. And I played in teams where, you know, you're just letting in goals constantly, and it is a depressing thing. You've got to pick yourself up. And all the heads go down. The heads in the crowd went down. People got up and left even when the second goal went in. So, and then the third, just depressing, the sending off as well, which was right in front of me. I'm literally right in line with it. And terrible pass from Adoy. And let's just say McDonald had a few harsh words to say at him as he walked off. And I think good job the camera wasn't on him too much. But overall, yeah, you know, the substitution as well for Kearney to come on, well, not a mistake to bring him on. I thought moving McDonald to centre back was wrong.
Yeah, I'm there with
you. Not, yeah, maybe not the change of formation, but certainly the movement of the people. I think Kamara's had a bit of a rough deal. Yes, the diving is horrendous. And certainly his end product has to be better. But he kept running, he kept working. You know, people have it ingrained in them. Once you don't like a player, and I do it myself, there's certain players over the years who I've disliked. And no matter what they do, I'm always going to struggle to see what they do positively. I don't think he was as bad as some people. There were worse players on the pitch on Saturday.
Okay.
So overall, questions are, why are certain players missing? Why is Jokanovic's in-game substitutions a disaster at the moment? You know, everything he touches, we might be a goal down or level, and then straight away, as soon as he makes changes, we just seem to let in a couple of goals all the time. And nothing's running for us, but there are so many questions at the moment, and you know, I think the majority certainly still want Jokanovic to stay, but he needs to improve his decisions, and the players have to improve their decisions as well on the pitch.
Okay, very good there. Before we talk about the starting 11 and the 18 overall, I'm actually going to read some quotes from Eddie Howe because I find them revealing after the match. I want your thoughts on this because title of this article from the Evening Standard, Eddie Howe tells Slavica Jokanovic to stick by Fulham philosophy and bid to stop the rot. And here is the quote because it's very revealing to me what Eddie Howe said. And keep this into consideration that Bournemouth's first season, they ended 16th and they went through a transition. So that's why I'm taking these words seriously because here's someone that has been through it, Eddie Howe. So this is what he shared after the match. Quote, "It was a difficult time the first year in the Premier League," Howe told Standard Sport of Bournemouth's early struggles. Quote, again from Eddie Howe, "I'm not going to give out advice. It's more for the supporters and the club. Fulham got here by playing the way they did in the Championship, which was nice to watch from everybody's perspective. I enjoyed watching Fulham play. Once you have built that style of play, ways of doing things, the last thing you want to do is change," unquote. Those are quotes from Eddie Howe, Mike. I want your thoughts on this because there's all kinds of talk about the style of play. And let's be honest, Slavica has been trying to find a solution. I think that the way that he started the match with the formation, I think, was a mistake against Bournemouth. He's still trying. But what do you think about what Eddie Howe shared after the match? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to use Burnley and Bournemouth as examples. So,
okay.
You know, if we start with Burnley, they got promoted, got relegated, come back up, got into Europe, and, you know, are an established side at the moment, shall we say. But they stuck with their manager. And, you know, they have a style, they have a business model as well. And so, you know, everything was complete faith in what Sean Dyche was doing. And I don't know if you read I know some people may have read my long thread yesterday, which I put on Twitter, but sure. Basically, do you have faith in Jokanovic? Yes or no? If so, you stick with him, but I put a caveat in there. He needs to sign a contract and extending his stay beyond next summer. And also commit as well that if we go down, he stays. So that's a conversation that has to be had with the owners.
Okay.
And the manager, obviously. No one wants to see a team get relegated, absolutely not. But, you know, Jokanovic has shown last couple of years the quality of football. It is a learning process for him. He's never managed at this level. I think he's, like many of the fans, you know, we've been away for 4 years. We've come back and I think, you know, we're a little bit shell-shocked at
it's a culture shock, really, Mike.
The quality of the middle to lower teams and certainly the middle teams is way more than when we left.
Yep.
And the money is distributed now to a point where, you know, teams in that middle tier can go out and shed loads of money. And, you know, we've done it ourselves. You know, we've got a midfielder on the bench, cost, what, 28, 30 million, you know, silly amounts of money. And before this year, we paid 10 million, 12 million maybe for a player. So I think you have to have faith in the person in charge and the style. Now, I would say, if anything, he's just confused.
Yeah.
The players are confused. I think Jokanović is confused. Doesn't quite know formation. Doesn't quite know what kind of style. We don't, you know, should we be building out from the back? I mean, Rico on Saturday took more goal kicks, I think, than I've seen in any game that we've done for a while. So it's going to need everyone to have faith in that. But as we know in the modern game, I think it's easier at places like Burnley and Bournemouth for small crowds to sort of, or a smaller club, to get behind one manager and sort of ride the highs and lows. And I'm not sure whether our crowd is equipped to do that, quite frankly. And it takes a lot of bollocks to do that. You know, we've lost four in a row. We could, you know, we've got Huddersfield next week. Could become five, which would be, you know, that's the sort of signpost for me sometimes. Five losses in a row, then, you know, maybe that is time for a change. But I think you've just got to hold on. I mean, I've looked at Bournemouth the year they came up.
Yep.
After 10 games, they were 17th and had 8 points. You know, how close is that? So, you know, that's 3 points different to what we've got now. So, and they stuck with Howe. So
did.
You've got to decide on long term. I think we spent so much money, though, it's going to be a very, very tough call for the Khans. If they feel they could ride it out, worst case scenario, then yes, I would stick with the manager. But I think we're going to know sooner rather than later, quite frankly.
Okay.
Given the run we've got after the next game.
I think the Huddersfield Town match could be a crucial one all the way around for Fulham Football Club. Max, I want to go to you. Your thoughts on what Mike just shared and also what I shared from Eddie Howe there.
I think what's crucial to make the difference, we were talking about other promoted clubs, is that the way we got up is so different than the way a team like Bournemouth or Burnley might have gone up. So much of our squad was built around loan players. And so much of the squad really wasn't there when we got promoted. I mean, you look at the players who we lost, Fredericks, Target, Callas, Norwood, these are Piazon. These are players who were still core members of the team that went up. So when you say, listen, you got to stick with the same style, why are you buying so many players? You're seeing a lot of arguments made in the media from people who don't know anything about Fulham saying, oh, it's just a case of ditching the promotion squad, that we got too many new faces. That's just total misunderstanding of what's going on here. Because if you actually look what happened in the Cardiff match, and to a lesser extent against Bournemouth, we had 8 players from the promotion season play against Cardiff. That's a huge – we're not necessarily ditching the old guard. And in some cases, the old guard might be the problem. You know, Tim Ream and Dennis Adoy, are they really a Premier League centre-half pairing? No, the answer is no. But the signings also haven't been good enough. So there are problems all around the team. But when Eddie Howe says you have to keep the same system that brought you up, I'd agree with that to a point. But I think what he's kind of missing out on is that we don't necessarily have the same personnel that brought us up, which leads to us being forced to make changes. We didn't just spend £100 million because we could. We did it because our team was literally threadbare. After May 26, you know, after the players had left on loan and Fredericks had gone and Mitro returned to Newcastle, we had to make additions. And I think a lot of people failed to recognize that when they analyzed Fulham from the outside.
That's a great point. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on what Max just shared, because while he's talking about this, I'm thinking about how Fulham were built the last two seasons, and he brings up a great point about all the loan players. It's just the way that we had to do it to get back to where we want to be. And now you're basically rebuilding a new team. And you brought up a great point. The money sticks out like a sore thumb. It does. So that puts more pressure on you. But I was actually on a show last night a podcast where the guys were talking to me that maybe you just have to stick through this and be patient. But it's difficult, Mike, because of that money. That to me is what everyone is pointing at. It's the money. But what Max is also talking about is that, well, this is a brand new team because all of, well, not all, but many of our players last season were loan players.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's well, that's the headline stuff, isn't it? You know, I mean, we're all guilty of it. You look at another side and you see what's going wrong and you don't really dig deep into it. It's only the fans and the sort of press guys who deal with the teams, you know, constantly know the backstory. So, yes, we brought 12 players in and we spent 100 million quid. I've just looked at Bournemouth. They got promoted. They brought 9 players in and spent about 20 million and a couple of free transfers as well. But they still brought in 9 players.
Right.
You know, so, and we had to use the loan market. I've seen people being a bit revisionist and sort of going, oh, we didn't have to bring all these loans in last couple of years. Well, we did. You know, last year it was the only way financially you could do it, because if we hadn't got promoted, any squad we had would have had to have been decimated anyway because of, you know, end of the parachute payments. So, and it's a means of getting promoted. And we've all said that. I mean, even if we had a full squad, you've seen the quality that we're coming up against. I don't believe if we'd come up and we hadn't signed a player, that our squad would be doing much better. At, you know, we'd probably just maybe be at the same number of points or maybe even less, because
right.
I'm sorry, you know, as much as we like McDonald, and I do, it is a bit fast for him. Ream is, I suggest they, because you're not hearing Ream being called in the stadium, so he's not winning headers because we're not facing teams who do that. And are the players just too fast for him to make those kind of tackles and blocks? And, you know, it's dreadful that we've got Ream and Odoi as our centre-backs at the moment, because I have said, you know, if Odoi plays a majority of games, we're going down. And if they are the two centre-backs of the season, because he doesn't trust Mawson, or, he, you know, Chambers can't find any form, then, you know, we are going to go down. I have no doubt about it if those two are the centre-backs. So yeah, we spent 100 million quid, and that's probably 30 million more than I expected us to. And it does make the threat of relegation and the possibility that they want to make a change, because we have to stay up, are that much higher. So an awful lot to gamble. But we have to spend 100 million just to rebuild the squad and get to some kind of level with regards to all those middling teams that, you know, we were talking about. And we've seen that spending all of that, even if they were all playing to their potential, would still, you know, be, you know, maybe only 5 or 6 positions higher. I mean, I've always said 14th would be where we'd finish, and I'm wavering a bit, but I'm going to stick to it at the moment.
Well, Mike, listen, both of you are bringing up great points here. Max talking about the loans from the seasons in past, and I understand that. You talking about all these new players, and also talking about these players that came up from the championship. I've said this on this show, and it's hard for me to say that Kevin McDonald isn't good enough for this league. Stefan Johansson not good enough. And I'm going to say it, and it hurts me to say this. I don't think Tim Ream's good enough, and I like Dennis Odoi. But like you said, I completely agree with you. If that's your pairing, you're in trouble. You're getting relegated. I'm glad that you came out and said that. I agree with you on that. But that also comes back to the conundrum, the £100 million, Mike, because you have all these players. And I think the problem that Jokanović is having, Mike, and I think you saw this in this match, all the chopping and changing, I think he trusts certain players, and some of the new players, I don't think he quite trusts. So that's why you're seeing the McDonald's, the Odois, and the Reams playing. So part of it is on the players, but a part of it is on Jokanović trusting some of these new players. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, maybe, I mean, we had, I think, off the top of my head, we had 6 of the 11 were new players the other day. But you have that little triangle of Odoi, Ream, and McDonald. in the middle of the field. You know, so, and, you know, Mitrovic is, has been, you know, point man for every game. And so it's, he's trying to just sort of use a bit of last year to find a way out of the problems we've got at the moment. But, you know, if he really wanted to do that, he would be putting in, you know, Johansson and sort of just trying to revert back to what we had last year. But that's going to be impossible because some of the key players aren't back. But, you know, we have spent, you know, we've spent the money on Mawson. We've spent the money on Frank. You know, Siri looks a good player. There's something about Agüero, or I can't never pronounce his last name, but, you know, I call him Frank. But there's something about him that's there, you know, he's decent. But there's other question marks. You know, you drop Brian, you know, after a few games. And why? Because most fans I was speaking to all looked at him and thought, yeah, he's doing a good job. Why, you know, why drop him? And he right back, he's just, you know, is it Christie? You know, who should go there? I mean, I wasn't too impressed with TFM there, you know, on Saturday at all. But he has to, I think, show faith. I think going forward, he's got to show faith in the big signings, you know.
See, I agree with that, Mike.
Got to go with Mawson, Frank, Siri. I do believe if Kearney's fit, which is a worry, and there's question marks there, but him, Siri, and Frank in the middle of that midfield, if you can't get results with those three in the midfield, then you've probably got no chance this year. And then I also think he's got to stick with Mawson. And I also, you know, I do think it should be three centre-backs anyway, given the fact that we have strength in numbers there. You know, if not ability, I'm not sure.
Okay. A lot to take in there, my friend. Very good takes by both of you. Quickly, let's talk about the starting 11. Max, I'll go to you first. I want to get your thoughts because when I looked at it, I was trying to figure out what the formation was going to be. How were you feeling right before the match, about an hour before?
I think we can probably say it was more of a 4-4-2 with Shirley Mitro up top. You know, you have Kamara, Sessegnon on the wings, the McDonald Terry in the middle. I think that was my best guess. Obviously, the one that stood out to me was Kamara starting. He's been kind of very much out of the squad to start the season. Was handed a chance off the bench against Arsenal. Didn't quite do well. But that was a major wild card for me to start Kamara. Actually, I was in favor of it. I always rated Kamara. I think he's a very bright player. And, you know, Mike touched on it earlier. I think some of fans are being a bit unfair towards him. He had a lively match, I think it's fair to say. He showed his lack of discipline. But let's be honest. For much of the match, he was the only Fulham player willing to try anything remotely adventurous in the attacking third. And we really missed that.
That's a fair point.
So that's what I have to say about Kamara.
Okay. Mike, I want to go to you. I want your thoughts on the starting 11 and also the shape. Was it a 4-4-2? And then also, here's my thoughts on this. Again, I'm not in with Slavisa and his coaches, but Bournemouth have been playing mostly 4-4-2, and they changed it to playing three at the back. Do you think possibly Slavisa was planning on playing a team that was playing 4-4-2 and decided to match up with it?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I saw the lineup, Sessegnon is the key, isn't it? You're never quite sure, is he going to play left back? Is he going to play the wing back role? Yep. So you try and figure it out that way. I mean, I did think it was going to be three centre backs, but it didn't work that way. It was a 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1 maybe, but certainly early on it seemed more like a 4-4-2, and I was surprised. You know, Kamara as a right midfielder for me is never the thing to do. I mean, he played on the left side against Spurs, and again, whether it was deliberate or not, and you know, and we hear from Christie with team instructions, you know, whether he was asked not to come and defend against Spurs, I don't know, but he did a, you know, so I would never play him as a right midfielder. I think the interesting thing about people saying, oh, how comes he stayed on all game, is the comments from Jukanovic after the game when he says, you know, I'm looking for power and speed. And that, if there's one thing he does give you, you know, you could argue sometimes the only thing stopping him is the advertising boards, the way he just runs. But, you know, he gives you that. There's no other player who gives you that in the team. And I would prefer him to play more central. If you're going to play 4-4-2, maybe play him up top. But then I've got to feel a bit sorry for Vetra as well.
Yeah.
You know, he should be playing. But, yeah, 4-4-2, for me, it's just not a Jokanović lineup.
Right.
I think it's counterintuitive to what he wants to do. And when I said earlier he's confused, I think that sums it up, really, because at Watford, he could play three at the back. For us, he's played primarily 4-3-3. And I think he may have played 4-4-2 maybe a couple of times, but I'm never convinced. I always think, oh, he's doing it reluctantly and it's not going to take him long to change it. And we saw him change it all, you know, quite early on in the second half. So,
right.
Yeah, I was surprised anyway. I thought he was going to go with the three at the back. I can't understand, you know, against Arsenal, it wasn't perfect, but it's possibly the best we've looked defensively that first half with those three centre backs. And why he doesn't want to go back to it, I'm just, you know, really surprised.
That's a good point, Mike. And I'm glad that you brought that up. And again, that's why I'm glad that you're talking about him being confused, because he just keeps trying to change things, trying to find the solution. And I just didn't think the 4-4-2 is, you know, a good formation for him. Like you said, maybe a few times he's played it, but there was no creativity with it. And I have to be honest, Bournemouth took advantage of us, I thought, on several occasions, especially down our right-hand side, their left-hand side. They were just taking advantage of it. And so that's what was puzzling to me, because I was trying to figure out what was the formation. And like you, Mike, I wanted to see Vieto. Nothing against Kamara, but I happen to like Vieto. I think he offers them a great deal. All right, let's go through, I hate to use it, this term, let's go through the lowlights of this match, guys. Mm-hmm. Key moments, they're all lowlights. Low moments, unfortunately, most of them. So let's start here. Let's talk about, you know, there was a header from Kamara in the fourth minute to get us going. And, Mike, I'll go right to you. Let's talk about the penalty in the 13th minute that was caused by Fosu Mensah. Did you get a good view of this?
No, it was over the far side, and I wasn't too sure whether it was Mensah or Adoy. It was all seemed a bit innocuous, really. But, you know, having seen it on the replay, it's a silly foul to give away inside the box. And as I said, I'm just not sure about Mensah. He's physically, he's got everything by the looks of it. I mean, he's fast. Can't seem to run and cross the ball at the same time, I have to be honest. I mean, maybe he's just too fast, and if he kicks it, it's going to go flying over. But there are plenty of times in the game he had a chance to get the ball in and just didn't. But, you know, in the end, he's playing there as a right back defensively. But I'm yet to be convinced. I do wonder whether I don't know whether he would be good as a right side of a back three. I'm not sure. But
he has played centre back, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because he's a big man, that's what I'm sort of thinking. You know, he's physically quite strong. I think you'd have to rein him in a little bit. but, you know, maybe there's an argument for him and Adoy switching. You know, I do think Jokanović has a thing for Adoy, and, you know, we'll continue there. But, it was disappointing. But Bournemouth had started brightly. And
they did.
You know, without troubling us too much, and to go one down when you could, you know, so early again, but it just, you know, it's repetition all the time at the moment.
Yeah, very good there, Mike. All right. And then, of course, Wilson scores to make it 1-0 to Bournemouth. Shortly after that, about the 17th minute, Max, I'll go to you. We have to talk about this, because when I was watching the broadcast, did not get a good view of this firsthand. I'm thinking, okay, foul on Kamara. But once we saw the replay, this is one of the worst dives I've seen. Now, again, we're talking about some of the initiative that Kamara shows going forward. You know, again, I get all this, but this to me was a horrible dive by Kamara.
I'm going to say the same thing I said after a situation in the Derby County playoff first leg, right? Yes, it's a dive. You should not be doing that. But no other player on the Fulham team would be even in that situation. Remember against Darwin, Kamara had that brilliant breakaway, flicked it over numerous players. It was one-on-one with Keogh, I think it was, and then he dived. And then, of course, he did. But no other player on the Fulham side would have the pace or really the initiative or the wherewithal to get in the end of that Begovic first touch and even be in that situation. So that's what you're going to get with Kamara. He's a wild card. I mean, Mike said, you know, nothing's going to really stop him running except the advertising boards. He's an absolute – he's a madman at times on the pitch, yeah. But that's why I have him in here. He absolutely disrupts other teams' flow. You know, I've heard it said many times on Twitter that even he doesn't know what he's going to do next.
Yeah.
So imagine what the defender is thinking. So obviously the diving is abhorrent. There's no place for that in football. But let's be honest, the fact that he was in that position to press a keeper and get that touch in before Begovic could is impressive. And that's just what you're going to get with Kamara.
Okay, very good there. Max, okay, then we actually have a shot by Andre Schurrle that is saved by Asmir Begovic in the 22nd minute. In the 38th minute, you do have the header by Doi that just goes wide off of a corner. And then in stoppage time, you have the header by Kamara, again, off of a corner. I mean, but let's be honest, Bournemouth were the better side. They go into the half up 1-0. And, Mike, I want to go to you. I want to get what was going through your mind at halftime. What was going through my mind was, it's time to make a change. And I was thinking this would be the time that he brings on Kearney. Instead, he brings on Kearney in the 60th minute. And I'm thinking afterwards that it probably had to do with fitness. That was probably the plan. But were you expecting a change at halftime? I know I was.
No, I mean, as I said before, you know, Bournemouth were clearly the better side. But I thought we were doing okay without troubling them too much. But likewise, I didn't think, you know, we had too many issues as well. So you're obviously looking at a bench, it's a strong bench, you know. But then we're having a strong bench almost every week, or you know, potentially strong bench. And Kearney, yeah, it's obviously a fitness thing for him. But, yeah, I mean, you know, 60 minutes for Kearney to come on is... yeah, probably about right for someone who's been out so long. And but you do, I am concerned about Kearney. You know, it took him a long time last year to sort of get into his stride. And we don't have as many games this year. And, you know, he's going to have to find it quicker. And I'll go back to it again. He is the captain. We're going to need some leadership from him, you know, sooner rather than later, both on and off the pitch. But no, I wasn't expecting any change at halftime. But, you know, I thought we came out second half. Like I say, I thought we came out second half and we're doing okay.
I agree.
But, you know, we got sucker punched, basically.
Yeah.
But if you want me to talk about the Kearney sub and what happened with the formation.
Sure.
I can certainly do that.
Sure, let's go right there, Mike, because I want to ask you about that, and then I'll go to Max in just a second, because the substitution is Tom Kearney for Le Marchand. This is what I want to ask you. I want to talk about how the formation changed. But one thing that I noticed, that we were more fluid when Kearney came on for obvious reasons. I think he has a huge influence when he plays to Seri. I think Seri is a better player for whatever reason when Kearney's out there. So I want your thoughts about Kearney coming on, the change of formation, and also what I'm sharing with you, my thoughts on his impact, because I think we need him, and I understand your concerns about his health.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt Siri's going to do better when Kearney's around. And it goes back to what I was saying, you know, if you've got those two, you know, plus Frank or even McDonald, then we're going to be okay. That's my belief. That's why you need to get Kearney fit. But the substitution, Kearney comes on, you're sort of thinking, well, okay, what change are they going to make here? And you saw Martian go off, and you sort of, okay, so Ryan's going to go to left back. They're going to move a few things around. But he came on. He put three fingers to McDonald and said to him to go back. I'm looking at Kevin McDonald, and he looks at Odoi, shakes his head, goes back into the middle. Sessegnon doesn't seem to know what's happening. Mensa doesn't seem to know what's happening either, and Kamara. And so you basically have a very, you have Odoi, Ream and McDonald, who knew they were at three at the back. Sessegnon looked like he understood. Kamara, I don't think the message got to him. And I'm not convinced Mensa knew either, because really Kamara should have pushed maybe a bit, you know, more inside, but it just, those two were still playing almost like a normal right back and a right midfield. So it was just a mess. It was, you know,
yeah, that's terrible.
He did not know what was going on. When Tom got the ball, you know, he found Mensa quite a lot. I mean, I'm sure if I could find those graphics, you know, those, he was passing the ball to him all the time. And, what I didn't understand is you've got Mawson on the bench. And if you're going to go to three centre backs, which, like I say, is what I would prefer to do at the moment, then Mawson for me is the choice. So it would have maybe been a double substitution, or you know, some other way. But I would not have put McDonald in the middle of those three. Disrespect, but if you've got Ream, McDonald, and Odoi, that's not exactly. You know, I think on a good day, you know, pace-wise, there's a number of us who could probably outpace them. But, you know, in the Premier League, you're just going to get murdered. And
that's what happened.
As we saw in a breakaway, that's what happened. And, so that was disappointing. And again, that's an in-game decision by the manager, which has gone wrong and has led to another goal, really. And he's done that consistently now for probably the last five games.
It's a very good point, Mike, because up to that point, you know, and again, when Kearney comes on, I thought we looked more fluid. Like you said, it obviously helps out Surrey and things were starting to move. But we were vulnerable in the back, obviously. And Max, I want to go to you because I want to talk about the goal by Brooks in the 71st minute. Mike already talked about the issue that we were having in the back, and this was too easy for Bournemouth there, my friend. Let's talk about the goal by Brooks that basically sealed off the match.
There's just no shape. There's just no defensive shape. I mean, I've seen the picture right when it breaks at the halfway line, and Fosu Mensah and Sessegnon are almost standing 5 yards apart from one another. And if those are your two wingbacks or fullbacks, that's a disaster. And you're left with, you know, Seri gave the ball away poorly, Ream overcommitted, Odoi was nowhere to be seen, and it's just very well done by Bournemouth. I mean, that's the difference between the Championship and the Premier League.
Yeah.
In the Championship, if we're chasing a match, we get away with these kind of things. And they might miss. You know, I mean, the moment that's really popping out to me, I don't know if this is fair, but I remember last season against Leeds, we were actually up 1-0 at the moment. But I remember Ekuban from Leeds got played through, and Ben Nelly made an amazing save, 1-on-1. And then we went up the other end of the pitch and scored to make it 2-0. That's the difference between the Championship and the Premier League. In the Premier League, we're not going to save these stuff, and they're going to punish us for the chances we give them. And it almost seems at the moment every single opportunity we give up is going in the back of the net. And that's just the goal from quality. And you know what? I'm going to go out here, and we haven't talked about the goalkeepers at all.
Yep.
But I'm going to talk about Rico, and I think if Ben Nelly made that one-on-one and went through his legs, I think the Rico Brigade are all over him and saying, why is Ben Nelly still playing? That's poor. I think Rico, he came out half committed, half didn't go out and pressure the ball. He went right through his legs. Now, I consider myself on Team Ben Nelly here. I'm not going to go after Rico because I think it's a difficult position to be in as a goalkeeper. But I really think there's no consistency between people who favor Rico versus people who favor Ben Nelly, because I'd say there's no difference in Rico's performance and Ben Nelly's performance in the past couple of matches. And I would even argue that changing the keeper in this match just contributes to our instability and makes the back five even more fluid. There's no consistency. And I really think that was a big mistake.
Okay. Very good there, my friend. All right. Let's now talk about what happened with Kevin McNally. He got a yellow card early in the second half and then got a second in the 73rd minute. So he is sent off, and Fulham are in massive trouble at that point. Then you have the goal, second goal by Wilson, the 85th minute, that puts this match away, guys. And Mike, what was going through your mind? Let's just wrap up talking about these low light situations, because again, this is just a poor match. What was going through your mind after the match, after it just ended?
at the end of the game.
After the match ended, what was going through your mind?
First of all, how we threw it away in some ways. You know, we were doing okay. Even we were just talking about the substitution and Kearney coming on, and we had a bit of momentum, and we were a better team probably for that 10 minutes
yep.
before the second goal. But, you know, it was just the second goal killed it. Heads went down, and, you know, of course, sending off just a minute or two later. And, yeah, I mean, that was pretty much game over because you just couldn't see a way back. And then the third goal just another punch to the stomach, really. And in some ways, you just didn't want another goal to go in, and just wanted just the whistle to blow. And so at the end of it, can't believe that, you know, we just can't get anything going at all. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, Bournemouth are a little side and we should be beating them, you know, because you've got to, you know, make your own luck and performances. And they've been in the league now, what is it, their third or fourth year?
Yeah.
And they're an established side, just as we became an established side. You know, forget about Gates. And, you know, they've got a pretty unsung players, shall we say, but in-house they've got a manager who has a system, he's willing to change it around when need be, but they all seem to know what they were doing, and they moved the ball. It's a criticism of Jokanović, is, you know, we moved the ball slowly, possession-wise. The difference with Bournemouth is, I thought, is that they moved the ball just that little bit quicker. So I came away thinking Bournemouth moved the ball quicker. They seemed sharper,
yep.
you know, more on their toes. You know,
would
were,
assertive
you know,
be a good word, Mike? They were more assertive?
Yeah, you know, but they're riding high as well, you know, whereas we're at the opposite end. So, you know, they're on form. Well, they're sixth in the table. So, you know, they're on a good run. But we should still be giving them a much better game yep. than we are. But I've just come away, and I used the word confused earlier on. That's what I come away with. That's, you know, you just don't know what we're going to do next. And I came away thinking, God, I just don't want to look at social media. And luckily I had an event in the evening, a family event, and so I didn't have a chance to do that. But
it was smart, Mike, trust me, very smart.
Just disappointed as well,
yeah.
just in some of the individuals as well. But, you know, we move on. But can I just say about the sending off? It was
yes.
absolutely, absolutely awful ball by Doi. And McDonald, yeah, quite rightly, you know, gave him some verbals. But unfortunately, that is a Doi. You know, he will give you that one mistake a game, absolutely bang on one mistake a game, and that's what he did there. And unfortunately, it's cost McDonald a game now, and arguably it cost us any chance of getting back into it, even though it would have still been tough.
Yeah, it was all over at that point. All right, guys, just to wrap up the show, let's talk a little bit about Savisa. Let's give him a rating. I don't think anyone deserves man of the match, and the stats I don't think really are important at this point based on how this match really turned out. So, Max, I'm going to go to you first. Give a rating for Savisa. That's how we're going to end this show.
It's a tough one. I'd say 4. I think he was outclassed by Eddie Howe. I thought, you know, Rico and goal, I was not pleased with that. And I thought, you know, the 4-4-2, although it might have seemed like an effective way to change up our formation and be more solid, we still conceded 3 goals at the end of the day at home. So I don't think I can give him a very high grade.
Okay. Mike, your thoughts on Savisa?
Oh, dear. I can only give him maybe 2. 1, that he gave Rico a chance. And 2, that he gave Rico a chance. Really? No, I really am seriously struggling because 4-4-2, as I said, is not his formation. And also the in-game management is just appalling at the moment. When the second goal went in, I looked over at him. He sort of raised an arm to tell someone to go somewhere, changed his mind, put his head down to the ground, put his hands on his hips, if I remember rightly, and just looked like a man who just had run out, absolutely run out of ideas on what he was watching, which usually means then he won't be around much longer. But I think he has a strong enough will and the ability, I do believe he still has it, to get something going and get some points on the ball. But he's going to have to do it starting next week, absolutely 100%.
Totally agree, Mike. And one last comment on Savisa, and I've mentioned this on the full-time show, and I believe I mentioned this last night as well on this other podcast I was on, that I feel like Savisa is hearing too much of the criticism, Mike, from the media, from the fans, and I think he's reacting to obviously shipping all these goals, and he needs to fix it. And I almost feel like he's reacting to that instead of playing the style that he knows. I think he's worrying way too much about the opponent, where he always talks about playing his style. I think he has gone to the other side where he's overcompensating and trying, like he says, going back to basics, as I've been told that they were going to be doing. I think unfortunately, the way that he's approaching it, it's throwing away his style a little bit. You watched it. That did not look like the free-flowing Fulham Football Club that I'm used to seeing.
Well, let's go back to first four or five games. I mean, at Spurs, what about that? What about that 25, 30?
Oh, sure. No, I'm just talking about this specific match, Mike.
No, but that's what I'm saying, though, Russ. You know, the first four or five games, although the results weren't perfect, spells in those games where we were Fulham. You know, you kind of
expect exactly. Fulham. And that's the been my point, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, the last two or three games, we're not Jokanovic's Fulham. We are not right. Playing that kind of possession football. And I think you probably, that's a really good point you make. Maybe he is reading and listening and too much. And I go back to the word I used earlier again, which is he's confused. It's confusion.
Yes.
And that if he's confused, the players will be confused.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's he needs to... Now, back to basics is a very simple way of putting it, but he needs to find his own voice again, and that wasn't his voice on Saturday.
And that's my point. I'm glad that you brought up, say, against Spurs. We could talk about the Burnley match. You know, you could talk about even a spell against Watford. That was still our style, even against Brighton in some points, still Fulham style. But that last match was not Fulham style. Max, I want your thoughts on this because I've given this a good amount of thought. Again, everyone is chirping about Fulham with all the money that they spent, with leaking all the goals. This is just my opinion. I don't have any proof of that. I think Savisa is hearing some of this, and I think he is reacting to it. And I think he needs to get back to his style and find the balance within his style. I think that this match epitomizes him abandoning his style a bit.
What I think a lot we have to remember about Savisa is that he's never managed in the Premier League before. This is his first time in the Premier League, and I think a lot of managers face challenges in adapting to new environments. And the Premier League, it can be argued, is the most unforgiving league in the world. And that's showing. We're nine matches in, a lot of what he's doing is not working. He's trying to change, it's not working. Back to basics, you can say, is the solution. But at this point, I don't think anyone knows what the real solution can be. I think one thing that is a minor solution, which we saw when Kearney came on, is that when we have players who can possess the ball better, it improves our defense. And it can say, listen,
that's right.
If we keep the ball more, we play our possession football like we know how to do. That's what I think about going back to basics. Then it really puts less pressure on the defense and focuses on our attack, which is, I think, where we're strongest. So, I mean, going forward against Huddersfield, hopefully Kearney starts in the off. I think hopefully Mawson starts as well instead of Odoi, I would have to say. And we can kind of combine that possession football with more defensive solidity. And yep. I do think Jokanović is the right man for the job. I think sacking him, unless this really continues, would be a mistake, would cause more instability. And I always think back to 2013-14 when You know, we had three different managers and how poor that was.
Right.
What we have to do is just stay consistent.
Right. And that's kind of where I'm going on this. That's why I am back in the manager, and I just want the manager to get back to his identity. And when he's playing the Arsenals of the world, we're going to be playing Liverpool. You don't have to be all gung-ho against them. You could still play within your style, like we saw against Spurs. There was that period of time where you'll have the ball. You can, you know, and again, good point by you, Max. You know, the way that Jokanović has built this team is through the possession-based style, and that does help out the defense. Not going to be able to do that against every opponent, but you can attempt to try to find the balance against the bigger teams. But against teams like Bournemouth, you should be able to impose your style, and they did not do that. That was the one big thing that I took out of this. That was not Fulham that I saw against Bournemouth. It wasn't Savisa's Fulham, and that's what was disappointing me. All right. Good show, guys. Great show. Mike, thank you so much for joining us at the last minute. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Russ. Enjoyed it. Bit of a vent from Saturday, which was required, I think.
Well, I wanted to give you a chance to vent there, my friend. I'm glad you could join us. Max, I know you needed to vent. Do you feel better now? You usually feel better after this, or do you still feel the same?
I feel a little bit better, I think, sometimes. It is ripping off a Band-Aid. You got to talk about the result.
Exactly.
I mean, Wednesday, ask me how I feel after we get thrashed 8-0 Betty Hat, and I'll get back to you.
All right, my friend. Great show, but it is time to wrap it up. For my co-host, Max Cohen, and Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.